Anondo, could you tell me about your family in Mexico and how it is you came to the United States, when you came and so forth, what the background that there was about?
I was born in Gomez Palacio, Durango, Mexico, September 30th, 1921. As the seventh of eight children, born to Andres and Petra Rodriguez. It was said the six to four children died at birth or soon after. After was not pointed out how they died or when they died. The oldest born boy was born in 1900. The next three were girls born 2 years apart, about 2 years apart. And then 4 years later, a boy was born. Then 4 years later, a girl was born. Then I was born in 1921, followed by my brother Carlos in 1925. In March or April of 19, he was born in March or April 1927. My oldest brother, Chong, was accused of stealing money from a local sports organization where he was working. My father, knowing his son, knew that his son was innocent and decided to send him to the United States, San Diego, California, where dad had two sisters and mom had one ex-sister-in-law living in San Diego. So they sent a group that consisted of my brother John, his wife Maria, and daughter, their firstborn. Along with them were my two older sisters, Camilina, Josefa, both single, and my brother, Andres. My father did not want his son to go through the French system of justice as practiced in Mexico, knowing that his son was innocent. After starting the process for clearing Chon's name, my father arranged to move the rest of his family to San Diego. To bring the family together. After a short stay in Juarez and El Paso of about 2 weeks, we were off to San Diego, California. The family was divided among two families for housing to accommodate the housing needs of 10 additional adults and one baby with space available between the two houses. They were all very helpful and were able to accommodate the needs for about 2 months while the family found accommodations and employment. During this period, I and my sister Catalina attended Lincoln Elementary School that has special classes for learning English for the foreign born. It was very helpful for about 3 months. Then the family found work and gathered enough money to rent a house that was situated about 14 blocks away. It was a good move. I was forced to learn and use English to communicate at school as well as playing in the neighborhood. It was here that I started my education. After a few days, I was moved from kinder to the first grade, where I was almost at grade level, almost the same size as the students. I went with these groups of students through high school. In 1973, after completing Memorial Junior High, I entered into the 10th grade at San Diego High School as a 10th grader. This was after I had completed 7th, 8th, and 9th grade and had started to learn in different rooms and with different teachers for different subjects. In another room and teacher, I was also on the way to high school. It was also the way the high school operated. One of the major differences for me was distance from home. The junior high school was 5 to 6 blocks away, while the high school was about 3 miles away, We walked to each school almost every day, except a few times for special reasons of emergency when I rode the streetcar. As I indicated, in my period at high school, I became very active in sports. My first activity was beach football, composed of younger and smaller boys based on points of age, height, and weight. I had no trouble with this. The next year, the new coach, Joe Burko, set up a new standard for team members, requiring that they must meet a certain weight and size. I was relegated to the junior varsity and the Bisley Bears of the local neighborhood in the playground that played football games at Navy Field. This became a great chance for me to meet a new coach and Florida Timmons. And that influenced my life. Frank Crosby was the coach that taught me to wrestle, but also taught me how to live my life to its fullest by being considerate and respectful of others. Coach Frank Crosby, a true guide in my life. Joe Burkle and I worked together when he was vice principal at Memorial Junior High School, and I was a visiting teacher. We worked together very well. While I was at San Diego State University, I went out to join the football team. I went out to play weighing about 10 pounds more than when I tried to play at high school. But now I was allowed and made the first string of the varsity team, remained the full season. After the season, I was called into the office of the director of athletics. His name was Dean Peterson, who asked me if I would like to coach the wrestling team. He said that I had been recommended by the high school coaches, wrestling coaches. I said that I didn't know we had a wrestling team. He said, there were many students that were asking for the sport. Yes, I would like to do this, but I wasn't sure I could do this and carry a full load successfully to become a teacher that I wanted to be. After all, I had been away from students for 4 years while in the military. I knew I needed to help to make sure I passed my classes. Dean Peterson was ahead of me and said he could arrange for me to see that I was up to passing my class requirements by providing me with tutors. And by getting this up, he felt I could succeed in my classes. In addition, I would get student wages plus parking privileges that I don't have now. I would take all my classes from 7 a.m. to 12, coach from 12:30 to 3:30, I would coach wrestling. Then I would go home, where I would work at the neighborhood house from 5 to 9 p.m. Study was weekends, and any time to get it in. It was tight, but I managed to do it. I was able to complete my requirements and graduate with my class. During my early childhood, I had the opportunity in my neighborhood to play, and not only to play, but to be able to speak the English that I was learning. The first friend that I recall was Jimmy McGuire, who lived across the street from us. He was the son of an Irishman and a German lady. It was his second marriage, his father's second marriage. And he and his sister, who was older than he, who lived and was married and who lived in Los Angeles, we had the opportunity every day to play together, and I had the opportunity to practice the English that I was learning in school. He attended a Catholic school while I attended the public school. Every afternoon we would play together and weekends. He was a great influence in the learning process of using English in play activities. We remained friends through all of our elementary school and lost contact after I went to junior high school and played with older boys in the outside neighborhood. It was a great learning process for me, because I began to use what I was learning in school in the play activities with my friend Jimmy, and he was a great influence in my life. We remained friends until I went on to junior high school and he went on to high school. That's the part that got.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chrissy, did you have a...
Pardon?
Chrissy, you had a comment? Okay. Well, thank you.
I have some other friends. One of my next-door neighbors was Jimmy Torrescano. Jimmy was much older than I, but somehow we became friends. After I had finished high school, although I knew Jimmy Torrescano for most of my life in San Diego, as he lived next door, and we remained friends throughout his first and second marriage. And he was living at that time close to us on Beardsley Street near Our Lady of Guadalupe Church. One of my next door neighbors, when I was living on Kearney Street near Our Lady of Guadalupe Church, was David Reyes. David was about a year older than I, and we became good friends and played every afternoon together. And that's the extent of my friendships, close friendships. I have a lot of other friends that I had who were neighbors. I got them written down over here, but I didn't know when it would be a good time to.
When you were in elementary and junior high school, you and Uncle Charlie did. You and Uncle Charlie were the only two that finished high school, went through high school.
Yeah, my sister Katie went through business school. Mm-hmm. She was 3 years older than I. So when I got to junior high school, and she didn't go to high school. She went to a private school and learned business education. And that's when she became a business agent for the Fish County Workers Union. And she was very active political, and she was very aggressive in her political life. And both your mother and I worked with her in her office almost all of our early marriage.
And what about Gepapa and Uncle Andy? Did they go to high school?
Uncle Andy, my brother Andy, he's not my brother Andy, went to Snyder Continuation School. And he would also, he would go there in the morning, and in the afternoon he would go caddy golf. Everybody in the family did some kind of work. They always were contributing to the family. Your aunt Katie and I sold tamales door to door. That's what we did. You know, everybody in the family worked.
You sold ice too, right? You sold ice too.
Yeah,
right?
And I also sold ice. Well, that was towards the end of the tamales stuff, and that came about because I got a wagon, and I found that there was ice, chips of ice that were broken at the ice plant down on Imperial Street, and I would go there in the morning and. Whatever was there, I would put in my wagon and went door to door beating the ice man by selling cheaper ice. and it worked. It worked until I got caught. the ice man wasn't going to have that type of competition. So I got busted. Not busted in the sense of police or anything. I was told that I couldn't do that anymore. And the ice company got aware, became aware, and made sure that the broken ice was placed in a place that I couldn't get to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So all this was in Barrio Logan. That's where your family was
absolutely
living.
Absolutely, Barrio Logan. Yeah.
14th and K,
I think. Yeah. We were living, the ice plant was on K Street. Uh-huh. And when we were living on Kearney, uh-huh. right near about three houses from the church.
Okay. Now, your sister, just before I forget, who's involved with the union, did she know or did you ever meet or know Luisa Moreno?
I knew Luisa Moreno. Yeah.
She was involved in organizing cannery workers during World War II.
Yeah, my sister was a business agent for the cannery workers.
Oh, okay.
And until she got into some political squabbles, and she said she left the union business and went to be a child care center director. And she mm-hmm. did that for another 20 years until she died.
Mm-hmm. And then also in your book, you mentioned that your dad was repatriated back to Mexico.
Yeah.
Could you tell us about that?
One day my father, who was looking for work, was standing in line to get interviewed for employment.
This is during the 30s, right?
Yeah, in the 30s. And the immigration office came by, just picked up people and said, you're unemployed? And they didn't care whether they had immigration papers or not. They just deported.
He had papers, though, right?
Yeah, my dad had papers, yeah.
So he went back to Gomez Palacios?
He went back to Gomez Palacios and went to work in a streetcar company mm-hmm. where he had been working before. And about 4 or 5 years later, we were able to convince that he would not be a dependent on the government. And we got him re-immigrated, and he came to live with us.
Didn't you also go back to Gomez Palacios, or no?
Yeah, after high school, my dad thought we ought to go to school in Mexico. Except when we got there, we found out that they were full and they didn't need anybody else. They wanted graduates from their school, not from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know whether we could have fulfilled the requirements there or not. Well, we'll never know because it never happened. We were there for about 4 months and then they re-immigrated to the United States.
Mm-hmm. So was anybody else repatriated or deported? Is that you knew?
No. The only one, of course, was my brother, but he voluntarily went back. But when they found out that he wasn't guilty of the restitution, they got him a job as head of the manager of a banana plantation down in the state of Oaxaca. So he went back, took his whole family with him, and then about 10 years later he came back. He came back as a bookkeeper with the Aguacaliente racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't last there very long because he was a businessman. And he established a small business office in Tijuana. And he had enough clients that he could fulfill his family requirements with his clients. So he left the racetrack and just did local business, and did that until he died.
Hmm. Now, growing up in Barrio Logan, you went to Our Lady Guadalupe Church.
Yeah, about three houses from there.
So, can you describe what it was like there in terms of the priest and did they have youth organizations or anything like that?
Well, the first thing I did after we moved in there, I became an altar boy. Mm-hmm. The church, so I became very involved with the church activities for about, I'd say 4 years, until I was old enough to go to junior high school. Mm-hmm. And at junior high school, other boys weren't part of the scene. Other kids would make fun of you.
Mm-hmm.
so I stopped being an altar boy. But during the time I was an altar boy, I was very involved with the church. Mm-hmm. And I was became very friendly with the priest. Mm-hmm. And I got along very well. Mm-hmm. After I went to junior high school, things changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. I began to look at girls.
Now, another important institution was Neighborhood House. Did you hang out or go to a Neighborhood House at all? What was that like?
Well, the Neighborhood House was a kind of a fun place for me. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, I became very involved with the sport activities, the wrestling, and there's where I began to learn to dance. And that changed my whole life. Mm-hmm. I became so involved with sports and girls that my whole life changed. You know, and it kind of expected, you know. Maturity came about, and you became aware of looking at the opposite sex. Mm-hmm. And so that became a part of my activity. And I was very involved in the neighborhood. I learned to dance. I learned to do a lot of things there. Mm-hmm. Sports.
So the Neighborhood House was sort of a place where a lot of young people went for different clubs and things
clubs
like that.
There were clubs. And that's where I first began to get really involved in wrestling. Because they had a coach, Frank Tweedy, who loved sports and got a wrestling match and started teaching us tumbling. Well, tumbling came into wrestling, but by that time I was already in high school. And I was going out for wrestling, so the two matched because I carry on my activities not only at school, but after school. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that became my whole influence in my life. Frank Crosby, a Mormon, mm-hmm. who he and I became very close friends. In fact, when I was living in Virginia, he came to visit me two or three times just to maintain our relationship.
That's great.
Yeah, and very influential in my life, and until he died.
Mm-hmm. Another club that you were involved with was Club Amigable.
Yeah, that was...
Tell us about that. What was that? That was in high school.
It was in high school. Yeah. When I was in high school, everybody seemed to belong to something, except the Hispanics. Didn't belong to anything. The blacks had their clubs, the sports people had their clubs, and the social people had their clubs. Mm-hmm. Hispanics had nothing. So I think it was about my junior year, I looked around and said, why aren't we having something? So I got to talk to a few people, and before long we had a group that wanted to start an organization. So and I said, well, how do we do this? He said, somebody suggested the friendly club. Okay, and we translated amigable. Mistake. Because when they introduced in the bulletin and read the bulletin, it said it's a meeting of the Gobble Gobble Club. They call it the Gobble Gobble Club, and it became that. And it was kind of a joke with us, but that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And we maintained and had a large attendance and a lot and many activities. I think we overdid it. Dances and whatnot, you know.
Were you the president or something? Or?
Well, I wasn't at the beginning, but I was later on because it was my thing. I helped to organize it. Got a few people together. And we, mm-hmm. Yeah, but I was the instigator. And after it was all over. I thought it was a sorry thing because the Hispanics had nothing to do, nowhere to go. But this was my senior year, and I was involved in all the senior activities, so mm-hmm. I couldn't do both. And so it just kind of ran down.
Were you involved in the theater or something, performing in the theater or no?
Well, yes and no. Yeah. It started in junior high. Sue Ernest was the drama teacher at Memorial at that time. She later became very active in San Diego State. And Sue Ernest became a very important person here in San Diego State. But while she was at Memorial, she organized what they called the Passing Review. And each year, there was a performance done throughout the school and the community. And she was the one that established it and organized it and developed the performance for it. And I was always involved in...
What kind of performance was it?
Well...
Singing, dancing?
Singing and dancing and a little acting. Not much acting, but a lot of singing and dancing and a little acting. And I was involved a little bit in the acting part. Not significant. I did an Indian dance for him or something like that.
So after you graduated from high school, World War II had started.
Pardon?
World War II had started, I guess, after you graduated.
Yeah.
So how did you decide to, the process, you got involved in enlisting in the Army? How did that happen?
Well, I had a choice of enlisting as a Mexican citizen. Enlisting in Mexico, well, I wasn't going to do that. I knew what the Army was like in Mexico. So I applied to enlist in the United States as a soldier and as a citizen. I made both applications at the same time. They acted on my enlistment as a soldier, but never did anything on my application for a citizenship. That wasn't until I had been in the Army and I had been gone through basic training in California around Sacramento. And then was transferred to Fort George D. Meade in Maryland, near Washington, D.C. And one of the things they did after I went through a series of tests was enroll me into the learning of and decoding of messages, mm-hmm. which they had to teach me the decoding process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the decoding process was limited to U.S. citizens. So one day during one of my early classes, the company commander comes in and says, you don't belong here. And I said to him, well, sir, I can't disobey you. You ordered me here. He said, he went back and checked, and I was right. Mm-hmm. And he came back and said, you know, the reason I raised this question is because You are not a U.S. citizen. I said, yes, sir, you're right. I said, but however, if you saw my application, I also at the same time applied to be a U.S. citizen, and nobody's acting on it. He said, wait here. Go. He said, no. He said, go get into your uniform and then wait here.
Mm-hmm.
Into formal uniform, because I was fatigued. So I went and got into my formal uniform and waited there for him, and pretty soon he drives up in his Jeep, drives me into Baltimore, and in 10 minutes after I was there, I became a U.S. citizen.
You didn't have to take any tests or anything?
No. I had already gone through the Americanization process in high school, so I listed that in my application, that I had gone through the program, what they call Americanization classes in high school in those days.
So Americanization classes, there's been some writings about that. What were those like in high school?
Well, in high school, they taught you about the history of the United States.
These were classes only for Mexican kids, right?
Well, whoever was there,
okay.
was not a citizen.
Okay.
It was a preparation, the process they go through in Americanization classes for adults. That's what they told us.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that was true.
Mm-hmm.
If I recall, that was a long time ago, exactly what the materials were. But it was something that you learned about the United States, what the laws were, what the regulations were, what the intent of the government was.
So these were 1 hour a day or something, or was this a whole class session, the whole day?
No, it was a series of lectures and readings that you went through, and usually was done after school.
Oh, okay.
In a special program for kids who wanted to become U.S. citizens.
Oh, okay. So then you were in the Army, and you got sent to Brazil, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was weird. It really wasn't weird, if you understand. At the early beginning of the war, there were many American ships who were sailing airplanes across to Europe. And a number of them got sunk. Mm-hmm. And not only they lost the ship, but they lost the plane. So what somebody decided the better way to do was fly the plane from Florida to Cuba to airports along the way to Brazil, across the Central Line, which was about 300 miles from Brazil. Mm-hmm. Land it there, then go from there to North Africa, which was another 200 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a dumb move, it was a right move.
Mm-hmm.
But so what they did, they set up a Signal Corps program in Recife, Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
That was as close to the Central Island as they could get. And they flew the planes from Florida, Cuba, down the coast until it, then across the ocean over to Central Island.
Did they select you to go to Brazil? Why?
I have no idea. The whole company was... It was.
I thought you remember you saying that they had sent you because you spoke Spanish.
Well, that's one of the benefits that you wanted, someone who could integrate into Brazil. And so, I would if I had a guess, I would guess that one of the reasons I was sent is because I was Spanish speaking.
Although you had to learn to speak Portuguese, right?
Yeah. Eu falo português.
I see.
Falo devagar.
That's great. You learned that while you were there.
Yeah.
That's great.
You know how I learned it? Every place we stopped, I asked to help the workers. And the company commander said, why? I said, I want to learn how they speak. I want to be able to, because it's very similar to Spanish. And the company commander said, that's right. So he assigned me to work with a sermon, a long sermon, all the way down. As we were on the ship, we stopped at about three different places. So
mm-hmm.
I had three chances to practice a little bit I could learn.
And so then while you were in Brazil, you found out you had asthma? Is that right?
Well, yeah. I was in the hospital. I went to the hospital with a high fever. And they thought that I had malaria. Well, after a long period of time, they found out it wasn't malaria. I was an asthmatic.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that didn't seem to bother them very much until I kept going back to the hospital by having asthma attacks. And so they did a thorough study, and they found out that I was an asthmatic and that I had some allergies that caused that, and which were very prevalent in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. So they sent you back to the States?
Yeah.
To go to...
I went to work in the message centers in Virginia. Okay. and in Florida.
Okay.
Florida was not a good place for me. Virginia was okay.
And then you found out you could control your asthma through exercise, diet, or something like that.
Yeah, I could control it pretty well.
Uh-huh.
And so they didn't discharge me until about a year and a half later. It was just towards the end of the war. Things were calming down.
Mm-hmm.
And so they began to look around who could let go, because it was, you know,
mm-hmm.
the cost factor for one thing. I'm sure. Nobody ever told me, but my assumption was that they were trying to eliminate as many as they could, that they would not be needed in the restructuring of Europe and Asia.
So by this time the war was over.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, it was over. They knew it.
Mm-hmm.
much better and sooner than we did.
So after you got out of the service, that's when you met your future wife, Beatrice, right?
Yeah.
And I think we talked about that last time, the last day. But is there, and we've covered previous interviews up through your coming back to San Diego from Washington, I think. And so your life since you retired, so to speak, how has that been? Any points you'd like to talk about?
Anything that I would like to talk about? Well, some of the things that, that concern me is that I left a job unfinished in here in California, in Bakersfield.
What job was that?
Well, in Bakersfield, we had started a program in involving, and the reason we were in Bakersfield is because the stability of the population. Mm-hmm. Although the families worked in the farm in the summer, they were always back in early fall and stayed the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when we were in the special programs in San Francisco and New York, the mobility of the population was so great that we couldn't get data to validate what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But in Bakersfield, we could. And more than that, we got good programs involving the parents in the education, and I'm talking about Hispanic kids, in the education of kids. And the community involvement in that was so prevalent and so successful that we had I thought we had something going.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mr. Hurst does the unruly thing and dies.
So you're talking about working with the OEO, or what?
Hearst Corporation.
Right. But
the Hearst Corporation.
Okay, you're working with William Randolph on programs that would benefit education.
Yeah. You ever read my meeting of Mr.
Yes.
So he and I became very close friends.
Okay.
And to the point that he would visit here in San Diego about every year. Been a week or so with us, and he really became very involved. So when he passed away, I said, "That's enough for me."
Mm-hmm. When they were both retired, when they moved back here, or maybe it started at the end of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Hurst and my dad initiated some pilot projects in several cities in the United States, providing low-income schools or target schools with funding for hardware, software, teacher training, and to get a program going to try and improve education in those schools, So they did that for many years, the two of them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So we did that for many years. And, and I became very close to him. And when he passed away, I said, forget it. It wasn't the money.
Because the
money still would have been available.
Yeah.
But it was the support and the encouragement that I would have missed.
Yeah. So, I think we talked about this before, but maybe again, looking back over your life, what kind of lessons would you want to give to the future generations based on your experience? You've been very successful in many things, both personally and professionally, but what kind of lessons would you think you should draw from your life?
My advice to the people is make yourself happy by choosing how to make other people happy making them successful when it, when in effect their success is your success. Their pleasure is your pleasure. And if you can understand that and live with that, life will be good for you. And you will be good for life.
That's excellent advice. So I want to thank you very much for taking the time to give all these interviews.